¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
Good evening and welcome. Nice to have your company on this Monday evening for another edition of the Irish programme Live on Air. Can you smell Christmas? I think we can. I think we can smell Christmas. And don't forget, I am here. Even though it's Christmas Eve next week, I will be on with a very special programme starting just after 6 o'clock as per usual. But first, let's tell you what's coming up on this evening's programme, shall we? A lady by the name of Lindy Nocton has produced a new book, or published a new book. It's a book of letters that Countess Markovitz sent from jail to various family and friends when she was there. She had about 8 different spells, apparently, of being in prison. And last week, we marked a very special occasion in Ireland because it was the centenary, 100 years exactly, since women first had a vote and since Countess Markovitz was elected to both the British and the Irish Parliament. So anyway, we'll find out more from Lindy about Countess Markovitz. Fiona Penelar is the head of passport services in Ireland, and she'll be talking to us about some recent developments at the service that allows us to renew our passport online from anywhere in the world. And there's some changes to the children's passport story as well. More details with Fiona shortly. We'll look at some famous Irish birthdays in just a moment. Birthdays coming up this week. That is Peter O'Dwyer will be here to talk to us about the B word. Yes, Brexit and Ireland. There might be a history lesson. We might be a little bit tight for it, but we'll see what we can do for you. But I was thinking the other day as well about the Irish charts, and I don't pay much attention to the charts anymore, either the English, Irish or any other charts, to be honest with you. But it dawned on me that the Irish charts only started back in 1962, which was around October of that year. And I wondered to myself when the first Irish number one was in Ireland and what was it? So I went looking, I found it, and I'm going to play it for you this evening on the programme. There may also be a Eurovision memory if we can squeeze it in. So let's start with the birthdays, shall we? Today, the 17th of December, Sheila De Valera, former TD. She was born in Dublin, but she represented the constituency of Clare when she was in Dáil Éireann. She was born in Dublin 64 years ago today. On Wednesday the 19th, we celebrate the birth of Eamon Andrews, one of Ireland's greatest broadcasters. He was born in Dublin in 1922. Thursday the 20th of December, we mark 2 birthdays. Firstly, of Noel Brown, a politician. He was born in Dublin in 1915, and you may remember your parents talking about the mother and child scheme. Well, he introduced that. That caused havoc and brought down one of the first power-sharing governments. So there you have it. Maud Gonne, who you will hear about when we talk to Fiona, no doubt, because she is a former revolutionary as well as Countess Markovitz. But Maud Gonne was born in Dublin on the 20th of December in 1865. The 21st, which is Friday, we celebrate the birth of Christy O'Connor, he of golfing fame. Not Christy O'Connor Jr. now, but his dad. 1924, Christy O'Connor was born on the 21st of December. And on Sunday, the 23rd, Noel Purcell. There's a blast from the past. I remember Noel Purcell as a child. I was the child, not him, obviously, because he was born in 1900 in Dublin. He had a great big bushy beard, if I remember correctly. He was a great TV and Irish film actor, Noel Purcell. So there we go. We are going to take our first piece of music. There are no musical birthdays this week, but if we do a Eurovision memory, it will be from 1981, if we do it. And that year, the Eurovision was held in Ireland, and the interval act was a group called Planxty. And I thought, we haven't had a track from Planxty. We've played Christy Moore, all right. So here is Christy Moore singing with Planxty, and when Christy went roaming out. It is Live on Air. Good evening and welcome. It's Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain. And the programme today, as always, brought to you in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
Who are you, my pretty fair maid? And who are you, me honey? Who are you, my pretty fair maid? And who are you, me honey? She answered me modestly, I am me mammy's darling, with me toe, I felt the tickle da. Diary for the diddle dairy, oh. Will you come to me mammy's house when the moon is shining clearly? Will you come to me mammy's house when the moon is shining clearly? I'll open the door and I'll let you in, and evil the one will hear us with my tour. Oh, yeah, fall the diddle da, diary fall the diddle dairy, oh. So I went to her house in the middle of the night when the moon was shining clearly. I went to her house in the middle of the night when the moon was shining clearly. She opened the door and she let me in, and divil the one did hear us with me tour. Yeah, fall the diddle da, diary fall the diddle dairy, oh. She took me horse, beat the bridle and the bit, and she led him to the stable. Oh, she took me horse, beat the bridle and the bit, led him to the stable. And there's plenty of oats for the soldier's horse to eat as if he's able with my tour. Oh, yeah, fall the diddle da, diary fall the diddle dairy, oh. And she took me with the lily white hand, and she led me to the table. Oh, she took me with the lily white hand, and she led me to the table. And there's plenty of wine for a soldier by to drink it if you're able with my tour. Oh, yeah, fall the diddle da, diary fall the diddle dairy, oh. She got up and she made the bed, and she made it nice and easy. She got up and she made the bed, and she made it nice and easy. She got up and she led me down to the hop to get your apple with me tour. Oh, yeah, fall the diddle da, diary fall the diddle dairy, oh. There we lay till the break of the day, and divil the one did hear us. There we lay till the break of the day, and divil the one did hear us. Then I arose, pulled on me clothes, darling, I must leave you with my tour. Oh, yeah, fall the diddle da, diary fall the diddle dairy, oh. When will you return again, and when might we get married? When will you return again, when might we get married? When broken shells make Christmas bells, we might well get married with my tour. Oh, yeah, fall the diddle da, diary fall the diddle dairy, oh.
That's a great song, isn't it? Christy Moore, absolutely. And thanks to you, of course, when Christy went roaming out. We're going to do a very quick break. Come back to me just after that. I'll be talking to Lindy Nocton about Countess Markowitz.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net. Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
On the 14th of December, which was just last week, well, back in 1918, a momentous election took place in Britain and in Ireland. It was the first election in which women could vote. Now, in Ireland, the election was truly transformative, with Sinn Féin becoming by far the largest political party. But the election was doubly significant in that the one and only woman elected on both islands was Constance Markowitz, returned for the constituency of Dublin St. Patrick's. Now, as we celebrate the centenary of female suffrage and the election of the first female MP, it is particularly fitting that the prison letters of Countess Markowitz, which was first published back in 1932, are restored to their original form by leading Markowitz biographer Lindy Nocton. The new edition also features previously unpublished letters that Markowitz sent to family members and friends, offering a unique insight into her extraordinary life. I am glad to say that we are joined now by Lindy Nocton. Lindy, good evening and welcome to the programme, and thank you for joining us.
No problem.
I suppose in the week that Theresa May, and indeed the month or the 6 months that Theresa May has been in particular difficulty in Britain, I suppose it's fitting that we celebrate female MPs and the female suffrage and all of that, and the centenary just gone. Markowitz was an incredible woman, wasn't she?
She was indeed. A very different animal to Theresa May.
Yeah, of course. OK, well, we take that as a given. Tell me something about Markowitz, if you would, please.
Well, she was a woman that was born to immense privilege, and she was educated at home. And in those days, of course, the role of women was to be the second in command in the house, looking after the house, you know, definitely second-class citizens. But she wasn't brought up like that, interestingly enough.
Right.
Her father was an Arctic explorer. The parents got the children. There was five of them. Got them involved in helping out when there was a second famine in the 1870s. And she was well aware that she was living a very privileged position. And I think she was struggling against that for much even of her earlier life.
Okay. And how did she get involved in politics and in things of rebellion?
Well, at the end of, as we all know, the end of the 19th century was a time of ferment. There was all sorts of people were looking for their rights, like the workers, the women, countries. So it was a time of revolution. And she was involved with the Sligo suffrage. Her very first bite of the apple, as she put it, was being involved in the foundation of the Sligo Suffrage Society around 1896, which didn't come to very much, it has to be said.
Right.
But fast forward a few years, and she had gone to Paris to study art. She had met Count Markowitz, who was very much like herself, big and loud and, you know, good fun. This is what people forget. They had great fun, the pair of them.
Right.
And but she became very disillusioned. When the pair came back to live in Dublin, she became extremely aware of the tenements of Dublin. And in fact, when Margaret Skinner, another Irish rebel who came from Glasgow, visited Dublin for the first time, Markowitz actually brought her to see the Dublin tenements. That's what she brought her to see. Not Dublin Castle or the Phoenix Park,
right,
but the tenements, and just to say, this is what's going on in this country. So she was very, very socially aware, and that's why she was loved by the poor of Dublin. I hate to use that expression, but she was a complete democrat. I mean, any human being in pain or suffering, she was going to take their part. And that's why, in my opinion, she's such an admirable human being, not just a politician.
And rather than being executed after 1916, she was sentenced to life in prison. And this is where the whole thing with the letters comes about, yeah?
Yes. She wasn't a woman to sit down and do much in the way of writing.
Right.
But because she spent long stretches in jail, she had five incidents of being imprisoned. She started writing to her sister Eva, and in this new edition there's also letters to her brother Joss, who is a kind of an underestimated figure in this whole story, I think, because he was a big supporter of the cooperative movement, and, you know, he did some pretty good things, I think, over in the west of Ireland.
Right.
So she started writing these letters, which are very personal, and show her. When I read the letters first, I immediately changed my opinion of her, because the opinion had been set by previous writers, I suppose, and the, you know, the way Theresa May, even, bless her, is absolutely attacked, and Jeremy Corbyn. If you have any kind of, if you're not part of the mainstream, you're going to get attacked, and she was.
Right.
And then you read these letters and realise she was just a human being, and some of the letters literally have, you know, I'm not the only one who says this, they will make you cry. You know, she was right, just doing her best.
And is there a difference between Countess Markowitz and any of the men that were involved in the rebellion and in prison? I mean, do the same sensitivities come through in the male writings from prison? Do you know?
I'll tell you one of the things that really interests me, and if anyone out there can help, I would love to know.
Okay.
As you know, the proclamation for the 1916 Rising gave equal rights to men and women, said in the new Irish Republic, men and women would have equal rights. One of the signatories vehemently disagreed with this. Now, I have my theory on who it is.
All right. Oh, sorry. You understand that one of them vehemently disagreed with it?
Oh, totally. Because Connolly, Pierce, McDonough, we all know they were, in inverted commas, feminists. I mean, Connolly certainly completely believed that women were the slaves of slaves. That was his view. And, of course, he was the greatest influence on Markowitz. Larkin's sister Delia was heavily involved in the soup kitchens that Markowitz became well known for.
Right.
And in 1913 in the lockout. So the men on the radical end of Irish politics at that point were supporting the rights of women, but they were a minority, because, as we know, the equivalent of the 1% of today will always get their own way in the end.
you're kind of narrowing down there who you think it might be, but let's see if anybody has any similar ideas on it, shall we?
I'd be curious to know. I really would.
All right. What shines through in these letters most of all?
Oh, her humanity.
Right.
She was hugely interested in people. She gossiped quite a bit. She read a lot of newspapers. She had squabbles when she was in Holloway, her second episode in prison in 1918. You know, she was elected. There were a whole gang of the Republicans were all rounded up because of their protests against conscription
right.
in the dying years of World War One. And she and Kathleen, I found when I read Kathleen Clark's biography, or autobiography even, that the humanity of Markovitch came through again, because they had these petty little squabbles, and they're very funny, in fact. You know, Markovitch would be smoking and Kathleen would say, "Will you get out of my cell and stop smoking?" And then she'd hear Markovitch snivelling in the corridor, "Oh, Kathleen, can you not let me in?" So what comes across is a very likeable human being, I think. And when I read commentaries or commentators describing her as divisive, I just think, here, you know, she wasn't. She was just a human being. Her first priority, as she grew older, the thing, and it's sad to read this, she kept appealing to the Irish people not to fight among each other. Please don't fight among each other. That was the reason she supported De Valera. We won't say what we think of her opinion of De Valera, but she actually thought De Valera would be the only person who would bring together people, because he finally backed down on the infamous oath and brought the Sinn Féin deputies into the Dáil.
Right.
But what comes across, as I say, I think is a very likeable human being, and that may surprise some people.
Where did you become interested in Countess Markovitz?
I became interested in her because I wrote a previous biography of another remarkable Irish woman, also 6 foot tall, interestingly enough,
right.
and also a heavy smoker. And her name was Lady Mary Heath. She was born Sophie Pierce in Newcastle West, down in County Limerick. And I read about her through my interest in athletics. She was one of the pioneers of women's athletics. And then I discovered that she had been the first person to fly a small plane from Cape Town to London.
Yep.
And also that her father had murdered her mother. But,
nice.
To put it briefly, she lived on the same road as Markovitch, Leinster Road in Rat Mines.
Right.
And there was a 30-year difference between them, but I just thought they must have noticed each other. There weren't that many six-foot-tall women in Dublin. Maud Gonne was another, by the way. And I often wonder, had they met, what the conversation would be.
Right.
And I also realised that my knowledge of Irish politics was a bit fractured, because when I was at school, it stopped. You know, I never learnt about the Civil War or anything like
That's
that.
Right.
So I decided to use Markovitch. Every book I write really is to teach myself in some ways. I decided I'd write about Markovitch just to find out what the story was. And in my mother's house, there was Diane Norman's biography. So I read that. And it's written by an English woman, but it was a pretty even-handed biography. And I realized nothing had been written on Markovitch in over 20 years. And she was well due
yes.
a bit more attention.
Right.
Thankfully, she's not. I'm delighted other people are writing about her as well, by the way. She's worth writing a lot about.
Now, the letters were originally published in 1932, and you have published them again, but you've added to them. So what significance does the addition bring?
Well, what happened was the letters were originally published because Esther Roper, who was Eva, her sister's, Markovitch's sister's companion, was, and Markovitch's other friends were very annoyed about Sean O'Fallon's biography of Markovitch, which
right.
personally I quite like, but that's neither here nor there. Sean O'Fallon was a good writer.
Hmm.
But they brought out the letters just to show that she wasn't a kind of a hysterical, gunslinging lunatic, which they felt was the image that was portrayed of her at the time. But when I was doing the biography a couple of years ago, I was reading the letters, and they weren't... I had a copy of the Virago version that came out in 1980, something like that. And I just thought, they're not the same.
Right.
I saw the original letters. I was reading them in the National Library. They have a beautiful bound edition of most of the letters. And there's blots on them and all sorts. And there was things that were definitely wrong. And also, a lot of names were blanked out because they presumably they were alive at the time and, you know, okay, they didn't want to cause offence. But so all of that is reinstated. Her political views are made more clear because I think Esther Roper was trying to tone that down a bit. She was definitely a socialist, and that isn't even today regarded as suspect. But also I wanted to include other letters that I had read to her brother Jocelyn. There's one letter towards the end of the book to Jocelyn about their mother who's dying, and it really would bring you to tears.
Okay.
And so it was to add that detail, to bring it up to date, to make it clear her opinions on people like Maud Gonne, which are quite funny, and just to correct an awful lot of mistakes that were in there.
All right. The book is called Markovitz, Prison Letters and Rebel Writings, written by yourself, Lindy Nocton. And it's available worldwide, I'm sure, on Amazon and online. Anybody here in Spain that wants to get their hands on it. And of course, if you're in Ireland, you just go next door to the local bookshop and I'm sure it's there.
Please go to your local bookshop.
You know, listening to you talk about her, Lindy, you obviously understand her very well and you feel you like her a lot. And that comes across in what you say about her. So I would imagine sitting down reading this would just endear the reader to her as well. So I do hope that a lot of people do go out and buy it and make a lovely Christmas present. All right. Listen, okay. We wish you well with the book, and wish you well with future endeavours. Wish you a happy Christmas, a great 2019, and thank you for talking to us, Lindy Nocton.
Thank you.
Seven. In walked Captain Farrell, I jumped up, fired off my pistols, and I shot him with both their wands. Mushering, dum-a-doo-dum-a-da. Work for my daddy-o. Work for my daddy-o. There's whiskey in the jar. Especially in my Miles chamber. But here I am in prison. Here I am with a ball and chain, yeah. Much a ring, dumma do dumma da. Work for my daddy, oh. Work for my daddy, oh. There's whiskey in the jar.
Unmistakable voice of Phil Lynott and Thin Lizzy with a great song, Whiskey in the Jar. And the reason I'm playing that for you today is if we get a chance to do a history lesson, I can tell you that in 1972, on the 19th of December, that song went to number one of the Irish charts, Whiskey in the Jar, from the wonderful Thin Lizzy. Right, we're going to do a very quick break. Come back to me just after that. I'm going to be talking to Fiona Penelar about the passport services in Ireland. Don't go anywhere.
Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net. Live on Air, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
A lot of times people living abroad look at the passport date of renewal and think, oh, genie, that's coming up fairly shortly. What do I do? How do we do it? Because we kind of forget as we go along. And if you're not in the business of renewing your passport, you may not be paying attention to what's happening and what you can and can't do. Now, the service has been expanded recently. The service permits the online renewal of children's passports, introduces a passport card for children, and expands the cohort of adults eligible to renew online. This expanded service means that all Irish citizens can now renew their passports online 24/7 from anywhere in the world. And to talk to me a little bit more about that is Fiona Penelar, who is the head of passport services in Ireland. Fiona, good evening and thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Do you look after Santa Claus's passport by any chance, seeing as we're getting close?
Absolutely.
Has he an Irish one?
Don't worry though, he checks it very regularly to make sure, and all his elves, which is also very important, the whole 200 of them.
It certainly is. Is there 200? I didn't realise there was that many, but there you go.
Oh, wait, when you're processing the applications, you see them all coming in.
And you know for sure. All right. The passport is something that we all value, we all treasure. The first thing that we cling on to in times of crisis is our passport, Fiona. And we have heard horror stories of queues outside passport offices and so on and so forth. But you're all the time trying to streamline the service and you've made some changes. So will you go through those with us, please?
Absolutely. As you said, yes, we're trying to improve all the time. We're on a journey of reform. It's really, it started back in 2015. But I suppose for the public, the most visible steps along the way are in the 31st of March 2017, we launched online renewals for adults. And that was for most adults anywhere in the world were able to renew. But then last week, we expanded that, as you said, the service now, so that all children, all adults who have held an Irish passport in the last couple of years, you know, if your passport was last issued more than 15 years ago, you're not eligible, but that's very few people. So for the vast majority of people, whether they're in Ireland, whether they're abroad, whatever time, the day or night, they feel like applying for a passport, they can do so online.
Okay, now, how does it work then? Because I know that when I'm renewing my passport, I don't think mine is out for another few years, but you have to go to the Garda station with your photographs and you've got to sign documentation and stuff. How do you get through all of that?
The witnessing has been totally changed, has been refined.
Okay.
And the photographs is definitely the most challenging part of an online application. So what we've done is we've given people a number of different options. So I might talk through the photograph first.
Okay.
So there's three different ways that people can submit their photograph as part of this online application. The first, I suppose, is the traditional with a twist. So you go to your local pharmacy, you go to your local photographer, but instead of just getting the photographs on a piece of paper, just get them on a USB key or get them emailed to you.
Okay.
The second is that you can get someone to take it for you at home. Now, you'll notice I don't say take a selfie. Because in order to have passport-compliant photos, your arm needs to be 4 foot long. And I haven't met many people with a 4 foot long arm.
Okay.
So get someone else to take it for you. You can do that at home. Now, what I would say to people is make sure you have a white background, a plain white background. If you do decide taking it in the bathroom is the best way to go, don't have the shower head visible. it's those little things.
Yeah,
you did have one person who took it on the M50. That didn't really have the best look with all the cars in the background, no. So, yeah, taking this at home is absolutely a good way to go. It is, of course, probably the most challenging because you do have to have the good lighting, you do have to have the right background, but it is very much an option that people do take. The third way, and we have partnered with photo booths, and we're constantly expanding the reach of that across the world. So we've partnered with PhotoMe. And what you can do is you go into a photo booth and take your photo, but you also get a code. And you just enter that code. You don't need to worry about uploading photos or anything.
Okay.
So there's a variety of options. Now, the other thing you're asking me about was the witnessing.
Yeah.
So for an adult, there is no requirement for a witness because you are the same person as you were last time. We have verified your identity previously, and we use a number of other background ways of doing it to ensure that you still are the same person.
Okay.
So that witnessing element has been removed for an adult.
Right.
For a child, now, there is a difference because obviously child protection is a paramount responsibility of the passport service, something we take extremely seriously.
Sure.
So there still is a requirement for the child's identity to be verified and also for a verification that the guardians have given permission for the child to have a passport. So what happens is, and anyone who's familiar with online shopping, at this time of year, to be honest, I'm too familiar with online shopping, but anyway, you go through the process and at the end of you pay and everything, and then you're asked to print a couple of pages. Now, if you don't have a printer there at that moment, you do get sent an email, so you can access it when you're somewhere you do have access to a printer.
Okay.
But you print out a couple of pages. One, exactly like with online shopping returns, is a label that you put on the front of an envelope. It is showing you exactly where you post your application supporting documents too.
Right.
The second is a list of those supporting documents, the main one being the child consent and identity form. So what it'll print out is basically it'll have a picture of your child on it, it'll have your details as guardian, and if there's another guardian, it'll have their details on it as well. And then you need to go to someone. There's a list, and it's a very child-focused list of witnesses. But unlike previously where it was generally a lawyer, banker, those kind of things, what we really tried to go with is people who know you in a family context.
Okay, like
so
a school or something.
So what I mean by that is a school, a vet is a very good one, the doctor, the creche manager, you know, different things like that. And
right.
It's really people who've seen you as a family, a public health nurse, you know, those kind of people who've had that interaction with. What you do is if you get the identity of your child verified by those people and the consent, it's just a one-pager. You pop that into the envelope that you've already stuck the label with the address on and send it off to us. And that's really the only additional part. But as I say, it is an additional trouble, I would say in inverted commas, but it is absolutely worth it because it's so important to protect the child's
absolutely
identity and ensure that all guardians are happy they get a passport.
And the difference between children and adults, obviously you've got the whole child protection thing, but children change as within a very short period of time, whereas adults, we look the same. We look about 10 years older when we're getting the pictures. Is that part of the reason?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And yes, no, very much so, because your whole facial structure until the age of 14 is extremely fluid.
Yeah.
After that, it pretty much stays the same. There's a number of different places on your face. No matter how much weight you put on, how much weight you lose, no matter what happens, that actually those measurements stay the same. So that's a really important part of verifying you are who you were last.
And the new digital passports, when they're read by the machines at the airports, they scan your eyes, don't they?
I'm not sure if they scan your eyes for an Irish passport, because we don't have the details of your eyes. What I think they do is do the face and the shape of your face.
The shape, is it?
And
okay.
Make sure that's the same shape as of on the photograph and on the chip. Because, of course, in an Irish passport, your image is recorded three times. So you have the photograph that you can see. If you hold your plastic page up to the light, you will see that is actually there is a lasered image of your face on it.
Oh, really?
And the third way is on the chip, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Look at your passport later now and see. If you hold that page up, you will actually see your face or the outline of your face. And then, as I say, it's on the chip. And that's all to protect identity, to make sure that someone else can't take your passport, change the photograph a bit, you know. So that's why we're such a secure passport, because we do have so many of those features.
I do recall the campaign that you ran a little while ago, and you mentioned that it was cheaper to do this online, to renew your passport online. So talk to me about the price, would you please, Fiona?
For an adult, it is €75 to renew online.
Okay.
And for a child, it is 25.
25?
Yes.
Okay. And the difference between your passport book and your passport card?
A passport card is an optional extra. So you can't apply just for a card and never not hold a book. So you have to hold a book. That's the primary document. But after that, you can get the optional extra of a card.
Okay.
And a card is really useful for people who are required to have an identity document on them at all times.
Right.
It is really useful for people who are traveling within Europe. So it's valid for travel within Europe and the EEA. So you can just have it in your wallet, have it in your handbag, rather than trying to remember where your passport was. Is it going to fall out of my back pocket? Things like that. Also very useful for people who require to prove their age, maybe for social occasions and different things like that.
Right, right. And a card would do somebody like me coming back and forth between Ireland and Spain all the time, would it?
Absolutely. Oh. There's no need to have your passport. All you can leave that at home nice and safely and just have the card in your pocket.
That's interesting.
In your wallet.
And that costs how much extra?
Depends how you get it. If you get it on its own, it's €35. But if you get it as part at the time when you're applying for your book, there's a discount on it. So it just varies. But it's around the €30-35 mark.
Okay. Well, listen, I think you cleared it up. There is a website that explains this as well, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. If you go on to be honest, the easiest way is go on to DFA, as in Department of Foreign Affairs, .ie.
Right.
And you'll very clearly find the passport section. You can apply online there. There's all the frequently asked questions. People seem to be finding it very easy, which was absolutely the aim, so we're thrilled.
That was my next question. Has there been a take-up on this since it was launched?
The first week, anyway. I'm just trying to remember the figures off the top of my head. But the first week, there was over 1,500 people used it. And that's only increasing as the word is getting out, because that was obviously without the word. We've had 300,000 people have used the online since March 2017. And the great thing is the speed on which it's been turned around. So 100% of people, their passport leaves Ireland within the 2 weeks. So it's 2 weeks plus the postage.
Right.
But actually 50% of people it's done within 1 week plus the postage. And 12% of people, it was done within 1 day.
Wow. And one final question, Fiona. I don't want to take up too much of your time. Of the people that have used this since it was launched, do you know the breakdown of how many were in Ireland and how many were outside?
What I would say is that it all depends on eligibility. But I do know that over 70% of people residing outside Ireland who are eligible to use it have done so.
Wow.
So it's really positive. And it's primarily because of the turnaround. I think that the cost is an added bonus, but really it is the speed of the turnaround has really worked for people, particularly living outside Ireland.
All right. And can I say to you, I had a memory just this morning of this time last year. I had to make a dash to the passport office for a various reason. There were two occasions I had to dash there, and the staff there were so helpful and so brilliant. And I just wanted to put that on record, because anyone that goes in there knows that they're going to be looked after as well. So there you have it. All right.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. Thank you. I'm very privileged to work with such great people.
Ah, they're good. And I tell you, the first time I arrived just before lunch. I'm self-employed, so I forget people have lunch. And there was people just going to the lunch, and I needed this document stamped. And they said, look, hang on, we'll get someone to do it for you. And they did, which was absolutely brilliant. So there you go. Anyway, Fiona, thank you very much for joining us today on the programme. Can I wish you and everybody at the Passport Office a very happy Christmas and a great 2019. And thanks for talking to us today.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
That was Fiona Penelar, the Head of Passport Services in Ireland.
Oh, the joy of Christmas past, time of our Savior's birth. Home fires burning brightly, a time of fun and mirth. Aromas from the kitchen, dear mother's busy sound. The voice of happy children, waiting Santa's round. Friendly light of candles, shadows on the walls. The rosary prayer ascending as shades of night just fall. Christmas, Christmas long ago. Log fires burning brightly, footprints in the snow. The voice of carol singers with songs of peace and prayer, drifting through the stilly air. Now it's Christmas once again. Changes there are so many. Vacant places at the table, empty chairs by the fire. No need for extra food now, the fire is dim and low. The children grown and gone, the old departed too. My thoughts go back to other times, to my cheeks it brings a glow. I smile and shed a tear for Christmas long ago. Christmas, Christmas long ago. Log fires burning brightly, footprints in the snow. The voice of carol singers with songs of peace and prayer. The voice of carol singers with songs of peace and prayer, drifting through the still air. Christmas, Christmas long ago.
If you remember the song Limerick, You're a Lady, well, that's the man that brought it to fame, Mr. Dennis Allan. That's a Christmas song from him that I play on an annual basis. It's called Christmas Long Ago. Thought it was nice, and I thought you might like to hear it today. So there we go, Dennis Allan. Quick break coming up just after that. I will be introducing to you the very first Irish number one on the Irish charts. I'll explain again in a minute. Don't go anywhere.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net. Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, I told you I got curious during the week for some strange reason, and I told you that the Irish singles charts and the albums charts only started back in 1962. It was October of that year, and I wondered to myself what the first number one was, so I went and I checked, and it turns out that between October 1962 and September of 1963, all of the number ones were either English or American. In fact, there were four number ones altogether in 1962, none of them Irish. And there are 21 number ones in 1963 in Ireland. Two of them were Irish. And they were both from the same singer. But the very first Irish number one on the Irish charts hit the top on the 6th of September 1962 for Brendan Boyer and the Royal Show Band. Kiss Me Quick.
Kiss me quick while we still have this feeling. Hold me close and never let me go. Make my heart go crazy. Say that so low. Keep playing while we are swaying, and we'll keep on praying that we'll never stop. Kiss me quick, I just can't stand this waiting, 'cause your lips are lips I long to know. I love you so. Let the band keep playing while we are swaying, and we'll keep on praying that we'll never stop. Kiss me quick and make my heart go crazy.
That song, it comes from Brendan Boyer, the Royal Show Band as well, and Kiss Me Quick, first number one in Ireland from the 6th of September until the 24th of October in 1963. Kiss Me Quick. He actually hit the charts again in December with No More, and as I said, only two Irish number ones on the Irish charts in 1963, both of them Brendan Boyer. Right, let's go to things a little bit different now than Kiss Me Quick. Let me out of here quick. Peter Dwyer joins us on the phone. Peter is the senior business reporter with the Times Ireland, and he joins us on a weekly basis, more or less, to talk to us about Brexit. Peter, good to talk to you this evening.
Thanks, Chair.
Now, Brexit. I thought we'd be done and dusted with Brexit while we were eating plum pudding, but obviously that's not going to be the case. Something that happened in Ireland last week, and it was on the back of Brexit really, was the confidence and supply arrangement that exists between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Fine Gael being the ruling party, let's say. Fianna Fáil propping them up in the Dáil. And this has been going on since the last election, and there was concern as to whether it would or wouldn't be renewed. But it has been renewed. So why is it significant, Peter, in relation to Brexit?
The three-year deal that Fianna Fáil signed up to with Fine Gael after the last election to essentially, as you said, prop it up and support the passage of three different budgets elapsed at the end of this year. And so the two parties got back down to negotiations to see if they could or should renew it. Obviously, Fine Gael and Leo Varadkar were very much looking for that deal to be renewed because it keeps them in power without having to go to the people. Micheál Martin and Fianna Fáil, it was less clear what they'd like to do. But last week it was announced that they would extend it for one more year, essentially because of the uncertainty that surrounded Brexit. Micheál Martin said in quite a pointed remark, I suppose, that the chaos that was in Westminster at the moment wouldn't be spreading to Ireland as a result of this deal. He was essentially saying that in ideal circumstances he would have liked to have gone to the people, mm-hmm. but that the national interest had to come first, and that Brexit was the biggest threat that Ireland had faced in decades. They weren't normal times, and so this was the mature, sensible thing to do, to put the country first. People will certainly tell you that, you know, Fianna Fáil probably wouldn't actually like an election at the moment because they're too far behind in the polls. But regardless of that, it certainly would have caused an awful lot of upheaval to drag down the government now. So this does seem like a pretty mature decision coming from Fianna Fáil.
I would imagine, like all decisions like this, it was a political decision. And as you say, Fianna Fáil way back in the polls at the moment. So was that really the reason?
It's up to everybody. Everybody will draw their own opinion. I think you can't argue with the fact that it is a mature decision. Mm-hmm. The question is, would they have gone to the polls if they were closer to Fine Gael, or would they have gone to the people if they were closer to Fine Gael in the polls? You could certainly make that argument, I think. Either way, we're not going to do it now, for unless something drastic happens next year. Mm. It's not going to happen until 2020. And Simon Coveney, when he was talking about it, said that, you know, the country was the winner here. Some people within Fianna Fáil ranks will certainly feel that they aren't the winners. Mm-hmm. Some members of the parliamentary party are most unhappy with this. They feel that they're they can't really be a proper opposition to Fine Gael. They can't pitch different ideas, propose different policies, because essentially they can't go too hard on the government. So some people are very upset about it. Micheál Martin knew that that was going to be the case, but he's decided in the greater good that we won't be going to the polls anytime soon.
Now, talking about being upset, and let's go back to Brexit and Theresa May. According to one of the newspapers yesterday, she hates Leo Varadkar. Seriously.
Yes, it was reported in the Mail that she loathes, I think was the word that was attributed to an anonymous source, Leo Varadkar. Unsurprisingly, I suppose, the Irish government were out pretty quickly to rubbish it. Simon Coveney was telling us that it was on radio yesterday, and he described it as being nonsense, I think, and rubbish was the word he used. Right. He said that the lines of communication were open, that he had a good relationship with Mrs. May's deputy, that Varadkar had a good relationship with Mrs. May herself. And Leo Varadkar was asked about it this morning, actually, in Dublin, and he said that it was patently untrue as well. And he pointed to the fact that the same anonymous source had suggested that Theresa May had essentially outsourced communication between London and Dublin to other members of her team because she just couldn't stand to speak with the Taoiseach, apparently. He said, if you were to look at it, that was patently untrue because they both spoke on the phone and in person last week, so it couldn't possibly be true.
You know, I'm surprised that he didn't say, well, as you heard on Live on Era last week, we were talking on the phone on Sunday night, but there you go. He didn't give us an old mention, but that's all right. Peter, I don't care if Theresa May herself knocks on the door next week and wants to talk about Brexit. We're not doing it on the programme. Simple as that. It's Christmas Eve.
I think I'll allow that. That sounds like a good plan.
So look, let's give it a rest for a couple of weeks, see what's happening, and can I say a very happy Christmas to you and to yours, and wish you well for 2019, and thank you for your input throughout the year on Live on Era.
Thanks, Chair. Same to you.
Thanks a million. Peter O'Dwyer is the Senior Business Reporter with the Times Ireland. And with that, I am going to say goodbye for this evening. Thank you so much for your company. Thank you, as always, to the crew here at Talk Radio Europe. I am excited and looking forward to next week's programme, Christmas programme, and I'm thrilled to be on air on Christmas Eve as well. 6 o'clock as per usual. Join me, please, if you can. Don't forget the contact details. Email GER at TRE.radio. Simple as that. Thank you, as always, to our Spanish-Irish cultural consultant. That is Jose Antonio Sierra. And you'll be hearing from Jose Antonio on next week's programme. Good luck now, and mind yourselves, and thank you very much for your company. Stay well over the week, and I hope that you get all the Christmas shopping done and everything that you need done, and be in a great place then next week to sit back, relax, and enjoy the programme. From me, Ger Sweeney, until then, thank you very much, and goodbye.
Watch where you're going. You're stepping all over my heart. Watch where you're going. You're breaking my whole world apart. You don't love me. You played around from the start. It's plain as can be. You don't love me. You're stepping all over my heart. If cheating's the name of the game, then I can't give more of the same. You hurt me and left me before. Don't come back and hurt me no more. Watch, watch where you're going. You're stepping all over my heart. It's plain as can be. You don't love me. You're stepping all over my heart. Means very little to you. Love, love is a word that means being faithful and true. You ought to be loving and tender to me. You're sure playing free. It's plain to see you're stepping all over my heart. Cheating's the name of the game, then I can't give more of the same. You heard.
watch where you're going. You're stepping all over my heart. As plain as can be, you don't love me. You're stepping all over my heart. As plain as can be, you don't love me. You're stepping all over my heart.
Live on Era, presented by Ger Sweeney in association with EmeraldConnection.net.